And good morning and welcome again to this edition of One Land, Many Voices. I'm Will Seaman, one of your hosts, and with me in the studio is Hala Gores. Good morning, Hala.
Good morning, Will, and good morning to our listeners.
And it's a very special program today, as you know, as you've undoubtedly caught on. We're doing a membership drive here at KBOO, and many people, they get a little bit of upset about having to spend a little time in their program talking about listener sponsorship, but I have to tell you that I'm an exception to that rule, because it's an opportunity for me to talk about what I think is one of the most valuable resources for people here in Portland, and in particular for people who care about what's going on in the Middle East, who care about what's going on in Palestine, and that is democratic community media, democratic listener-sponsored grassroots community media. Hala, what do we have for people that's really special if they become a listener sponsor during this program?
We have a couple of gifts that are, in fact, very special. We have 10 books to hand out this morning for the first 10 callers that ask for them. Rashid Khalidi's The Iron Cage, The Story of the Palestinian Struggle for Statehood. Folks, these are books that Dr. Rashid Khalidi himself signed. So please call in and make your pledge and grab one of these books. We're also very lucky, thanks to Doug Wilbanks, for donating two of Ilan Pape's books, The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. And because we only have two, we want to hear those phones ringing so that the first two that make a pledge can get a chance at getting those books. And people, if you have the book already, you can always give it as a gift.
That's absolutely right. So call right now at 503-232-8818, 503-232-8818, and get one of these terrific books, a signed book by the noted author, Columbia professor, the Edward Said professor at Columbia University in New York, Rashid Khalidi, The Iron Cage. This is an incredible, valuable contribution to understanding what's happened, the history of the conflict in Palestine-Israel. This is going to give you some insights, some news and perspectives that you can use to then move beyond understanding what's going on there to become an effective organizer on this issue. Because, of course, we're not just talking about knowing about these issues, but actually engaging with these issues. And I should say that we're going to be listening to Rashid Khalidi a little bit later in the program. Right now we want you to call, though. We want you to call 503-232-8818. But our first segment, and it's a very special segment, it's a segment that was completely unplanned. We have a special guest here in the studio with us. This gentleman, who you have undoubtedly heard of, if you've been listening to community radio, to KBOO here in Portland, and if you're a listener-sponsored especially, I'm sure you've been listening, you know this gentleman. In fact, we got a call early on when we started doing this program, One Land, Many Voices, and the very first request for a guest was just this man. That's right, Mr. Raed Jarar of Raed in the Middle, I believe, the famous blog on Iraq. And I'm going to say one more time as part of this initial pledge break, please give us a call, 503-232-8818. You heard about the wonderful membership gifts that we've got for you. In addition to these two books, we also have a DVD of Rashid Khalidi's lecture on June 23rd. That's available as a pledge premium, and the audio CD. But first, I'd like to introduce our guest this morning. Raed, first of all, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot for having me. I'm sure that the majority of your audience were like, who's this guy?
I'm afraid not.
After this long introduction.
Now, of course, we're doing radio, but what is it that what kind of shirt am I wearing that people must know about? Remind us again, why is it that this shirt that I'm wearing, and please tell our listeners what you just saw.
It's the story that happened to me last year. I was wearing a T-shirt with Arabic and English script that read, "We will not be silent," and I was prevented by the TSA and JetBlue security and other officials from boarding on my airplane. I was flying from JFK going back to Oakland at that time. And I was told by the TSA official that wearing a T-shirt with Arabic script and going to a U.S. airport is like going to a bank while wearing a T-shirt that reads I'm a robber. And that's why they made me cover my T-shirt, and then after that they changed my seat in the airplane from the beginning of the airplane, and they put me to the end of the airplane because like it seems like I was like a security threat or like a terrorist or something because I'm an Arab or a Muslim. So I think at that time there was some media coverage to the incident, and I filed an official complaint through the ACLU last month or the month before, and now we are waiting for the next stages of the legal suit. I mean, I think we'll have some updates within the next few weeks.
Raed, good morning. I am so happy to have you here with us this morning. The T-shirt that you are wearing said on it in Arabic, "Len nasmut," we will not be silent. To have a message that is a message that goes back to Nazi-era Germany to be such a threat to the TSA and be considered a security risk is mind-boggling. I understand that now the ACLU and the New York Civil Liberties Union is involved in terms of pursuing a lawsuit. What do you hope to accomplish?
A number of things, in fact. Among these things are making sure that this racial profiling be publicly made illegal, or I mean, it is illegal, but just to make it clear that it's illegal to racially profile Arabs or Muslims or any minorities or majorities in the United States, and to make sure that this will not happen to me again or to any other U.S. taxpayers and residents, whether they were from a minority or from a majority. The thing that terrified me is that I felt like I'm not living in the U.S. of post the civil rights movement. You know, like these things have already happened in the U.S. People were sent to the back of buses because they were black, and people were racially profiled and oppressed based on their linguistic or racial or religious backgrounds, and I thought when I moved to the U.S. that these things were made clear in the 50s, and now we are living in another United States. But it seems like there are some people who are trying to pull the U.S. back to the pre civil rights movement and time, you know, to the time where racial profiling is legitimate and it's a tool for dealing with the security concerns. I mean, one of the things that yesterday in the event, someone asked me, how come Iraqis don't hate us? And I said, I think it's a very thing, like great thing to admire, is that Iraqis and Palestinians and Iranians and Lebanese, who have been destroyed for generations by U.S. taxpayers' money and by U.S. elected governments, in the region, this is like they don't hate Americans. They know how to separate between the U.S. foreign policy that destroyed them and destroyed their lives for generations, and between Americans who come visit them as guests and like you know they're welcoming them and stuff. I said, when I come to the U.S. and get racially profiled because of what Al Qaeda did, I didn't vote for Al Qaeda, and I didn't pay taxes for Al-Qaeda, and more importantly, I didn't vote for Al-Qaeda again. So, so I was saying yesterday that it's like really meaningless to racially profile Arabs or Muslims based on an incident that happened by an extremist group that doesn't represent the opinion of the majority of Arabs and Muslims, and an extremist group that was supported by the U.S. foreign policy in Afghanistan and elsewhere. Why would I pay the price of that, you know? It's such a weird dynamic that is playing in the U.S., and that is many people in some stations were discussing racial profiling after my incident as if it's a good idea. You know, they were saying, but, I mean, we should have a separate line for Muslims in airports because they are terrorists.
Yeah, I think we should have actually a separate line for administrative officials who should be definitely taken aside and given an extra going over in terms of security. Certainly the disaster in Iraq, which you are now touring the country talking about, this is a part of an American Friends Service Committee speaking tour. Could you talk a little bit about that? And in particular, I wonder, we spoke last night briefly about U.S. foreign policy towards the region and about the elements of U.S. foreign policy that link up the approach to the Middle East with respect to Iran, with respect to Iraq, and also, which is, of course, the focus of our program, Israel-Palestine. Could you talk a little bit about your work in Washington, D.C., along those lines?
Yeah, I mean, even before I moved to Washington, D.C., I'm half Palestinian and half Iraqi, and I lived in Iraq most of my life, but I lived in other countries around the Middle East as well. And I realized even before living in Washington, D.C., that what used to happen in Palestine and what is happening now in Iraq and what will be happening in Iran are symptoms of the same U.S. foreign policy. It's the U.S. foreign policy that is decades long, a militarized foreign policy that is based on intimidation and bombing and occupations of other countries around the world and destruction of the international law. The U.S. foreign policy worked very hard in the last decades to destroy any international law or any international limitations for what the U.S. can be doing around the world, whether it was politically or humanitarian-wise. So I think the thing that links what's happening in Iraq and Palestine and other places around the world is how do the administration view the world? And more importantly, how do U.S. Residents and taxpayers view the world? Because unfortunately, I can feel that there, whether we were in, having an audience on the right or from the left, people have this space of foreign intervention in their mentality, whether they were believers of war on terror and interfering in other countries to destroy the terrorists, the evils who want to attack us because we are free, or whether they were on the left and want to interfere in other countries and save them, rescue them, humanitarian security, responsibility to protect, and these types of theories that push even people in the left to stop respecting sovereignty and international law and other people's right and capacity to self-rule and self-determine their future. So that's why I think it's a huge problem. It's like a problem that needs decades of working on to let everyone, whether they were on the right or on the left, understand that Iraqis and Palestinians and Somalians and Lebanese and everyone around the world know how to rule themselves. Their women know how to fight for their rights without some, bomb falling on their neighborhood to rescue them. And their men know how to fight for their rights. And whether they were straight or gay, whether they were young or old, they have their fights. Iraqis and Iranians have been fighting and struggling to get more social freedoms and social achievements for the last thousands of years. So I think without this understanding of this, we will be going in these empty circles, like what they say now. We can't pull out from Iraq because maybe the Sunnis and the Shia will kill each other. And this drives me crazy as a half Sunni, half Shia, who realizes that the conflict in Iraq is political based, not sectarian based. It's a fight between those who are Sunnis and Shia who are nationalists and Sunnis and Shia who are separatists who are supported by the occupation, and that the Iraqi fight is happening because of the U.S. presence there. It's because of foreign intervention. So this idea of keeping our troops to protect Iraqis from each other is such a crazy idea. I can't believe that people can buy it this easily. People wouldn't buy it unless they have this place for believing that there is something superior about being American or coming from outside to rescue Iraqis from themselves, or Americans being entitled to save the world from itself and run the world in a better way.
We're lucky this morning to be here with Ra'ed Jarar, blogger, Ra'ed in the Middle, architect, Palestinian Iraqi. For You, the many friends of One Land, Many Voices, please call in your pledge and support community-sponsored radio dedicated to providing you news and views on Palestine, Israel, through One Land, Many Voices. Please call in. Our number is 503-232-8818. That's 503-232-8818. And for those of you outside of the Portland area, please call toll-free 1-877-500-5266. That's 1-877-500-5266.
And we're going to an official pledge break soon, so we only have a few moments here with Raed. Hala, in terms of the issues around Palestine, what have you seen? What kind of questions come to mind in terms of understanding this broader approach to the Middle East, this broader approach to the Middle East of the U.S. foreign policy, and how can we begin to understand, again, the links between these different interventions?
Actually, I'll tell you that those of us from the Middle East understand full well the connectedness between the occupation of Palestine and the occupation of Iraq. When we talk about imperial powers that come in and take over a place, they're not doing it to bring democracy. Certainly the Zionists didn't do that with respect to Palestine. The Americans are not doing it with respect to Iraq. And for me personally, I feel like it's the oil, stupid, bringing to mind Clinton's comment about the economy. Raed, what can you tell us about the Arab street in terms of how these two occupations are viewed?
In fact, whether it was the Arab or American or Israeli streets, I think there are many people, from regardless to their ethnicity or language or background, who believe that these policies of intimidation are bad for everyone. I have a number of Israeli friends who live in Israel and think that the Israeli foreign policy, supported by the U.S. foreign policy, is creating a less safe environment for Israelis. The same thing, Arabs think that this policy of Israel and the U.S. and the region is creating a less safe environment for Arabs. And even Americans who understand how the world politics and world environment works, it looks like, realize that the U.S. now is in a less safe place than it was 5 years ago, and less safe place it was 10 years ago, and less safe place 15 years ago, because of this continuous, unfair, illegal intervention in countries around the world, and spending, like now in Iraq, $720 million a day on killing and destroying a nation. It breaks that down to $500,000 a minute. Imagine the $500,000 a minute.
And how many Iraqis killed so far?
According to the latest studies, around 1 million Iraqis have been killed because of the increasing violence and deterioration in services and failure of infrastructure, in addition to around 4.5 million Iraqi displaced people, whether half of them were displaced inside the country, another half outside the country. There is a huge disaster in Iraq, and Iraqis are waiting to start the process of solving these disasters. There is a long, long, long path of rebuilding, reconstruction, and reconciliation. But the majority of Iraqis, around 80%, think that nothing will start happening, nothing good will start happening, unless the U.S. completely withdraws from Iraq. There should be a complete withdrawal without leaving any permanent bases or mercenaries or troops in Iraq. This is what 80% of the Iraqi population are saying. 80% are saying that things are becoming worse of the U.S. Presence there, the military presence, and that once the U.S. military pulls out, things will become better, and it will be the first step in the long process of reconstruction and reconciliation. So I think without having this understanding of what the Iraqis want, and how do they have the right and capacity to rule their country without military intervention from the U.S., it will be going in this, on and on in this illegal occupation that is making everything worse. And one point to say, last point, is that this ending of the military intervention shouldn't be linked to ending the United States government and taxpayers' responsibility towards Iraq and Iraqis. It's not like, let's pull the troops and invade the next country, or like just forget about Iraq. There is a moral and legal responsibility for American taxpayers taxpayers who, like myself, who are funding the war, to actually pay compensation and help Iraqis rebuild their country by themselves, the same way that Iraq have been paying compensation to Kuwait because of the illegal occupation of Kuwait in 1990. Iraqi troops are not going around the streets of Kuwait City killing civilians. Iraq is not telling Kuwait how to spend the compensation, but they are still paying 5% of Iraq's oil revenue to Kuwait as compensation. So this moral and legal obligation should not end with Iraq for the next decades, maybe. But the military intervention must end as soon as possible.
Raed, what do you say to those people who say that it was wrong to go into Iraq, to invade that country and occupy it, but now that we're there, we can't pull out, that it will be an all-out civil war between the Shia, the Sunni, the Kurds? What do you say to them?
I say to them, as a half-Sunni, half-Shia person, who realizes that there are no indicators on the ground that the Iraqi-Iraqi fight is sectarian-based. All indicators, whether it was from the Iraqi parliament or the Iraqi public, are about having a conflict that is putting Sunnis and Shia, who are nationalists, for keeping their country united and for keeping the oil nationalized and for kicking outside any foreign interventionists, whether they were American or Iranian or Al-Qaeda. These Sunnis and Shia are fighting against a minority of other Sunnis and Shia who are collaborating with the occupation and who are planning to split the country into a Sunnistan and Shiastan and privatize the oil and keep the United States there and other foreign interventions on the long run. What the majority of Iraqis are saying, if anyone is interested to hear the voice of the majority of Iraqis, because Iraq belongs to them, by the way, what the majority of Iraqis are saying is that leave us alone. This is what Iraqis are saying. They have been saying this for hundreds of years. Every time they get occupied, in 1918, the British army refused to pull out from Iraq. There is a very good quote from the general of chief general of the British army in Iraq in 1918, saying, "We can't pull out from Iraq because a civil war between Sunnis and Shia will erupt." What happened after 2 years? Both Sunnis and Shia actually erupted, but in a revolution that kicked out the British from Iraq. So there are no precedents in Iraq's history where Sunnis and Shia had civil war, and there are no indicators or signs in the foreseeable future that Iraqi Sunnis and Shia will have a war based on their theological differences. What's happening now is a conflict between Iraqis and their occupiers, and the Iraqi-Iraqi conflict that is happening on the side of that conflict is political based. It will be reduced once the U.S. pulls out.
And our guest today is Raed Jarar. He is a policy analyst, and he's on a speaking tour. The next stop for that speaking tour, if you want to hear more from Raed, and also you have another gentleman traveling with you. This is part of the American Friends Service Committee. He's talking also about visiting different areas where Iraqi refugees are ending up. You're speaking in Eugene, Oregon, just down I-5 today at 6:30 p.m. at Harris Hall. That's at the corner of 8th and Oak Street in Eugene. Definitely, if you're anywhere near Eugene, I would recommend you take a drive down I-5 to listen to Raed tonight. It's a very compelling and a very important presentation. Raed, I know you have to take off. What thoughts do you want to leave with our listeners this morning?
I want to just end by mentioning what my colleague Noah Merrill is speaking about. He's focusing on the issue of Iraqi refugees and displaced people, while I'm trying to make it clear that the only strategic solution for Iraqi refugees and internally displaced Iraqis is not giving them charity or bringing them to the United States, the 4 million of them. These are not the solutions that Iraqis want, and these are not the solutions that can be implemented. The solution that Iraqis want, the majority of the Iraqi refugees and IDPs, is to go home. And to go home, they need to get their country back. So without fully understanding the complexity of what's happening in Iraq and what the majority of Iraqis are demanding, whether they were in the elected parliament, that is usually ignored, or whether they were from the Iraqi public, what they are demanding is getting their country back to start the process of like reconciliation. And one of the things that they will do once the U.S. completely withdraws from Iraq without leaving any permanent bases or mercenaries or troops is working to get the refugees back there. Now, in the meanwhile, there are some projects, like the one that Noah will be speaking about tonight as well. It's a project for trying to ease the suffering of Iraqi refugees and IDPs in the meanwhile by sending direct aid. It's like the direct aid initiative for a website called Electronic Iraq. It's electroniciraq.net. So they are collecting some funds and actually sending either medicines or medical care to Iraqis in Syria and Jordan and even inside Iraq, maybe in the near future. So I think speaking about the issue of refugees from these two perspectives, what can we do as an emergency appeal that is happening now? There are humans who are being killed and destroyed because of our tax money in Iraq. They are dying because they don't have $5 to buy an antibiotic, right? How can we deal with this emergency without understanding, without forgetting what should we do as a strategic solution? We can't send them $5 every day for the rest of our lives, right? They don't want to, and this is not the solution. The solution is ending the occupation and giving Iraqis the chance and to exercise their right of self-ruling and solving their problems and rebuilding their country.
Ra'ed, can you tell us how many Iraqi refugees there are and which countries they are in and how many are internally displaced?
Overall, there are 4.5 million Iraqis who fled their homes. Roughly half of them are outside the country and the other half inside the country, around 2.2 million inside the country, another 2.2 million outside the country. Now, to understand why they left, we should understand that the major infrastructure collapsed. There is no electricity or water or sewage or hospitals or schools. All of these things collapsed because of the U.S. illegal occupation of Iraq. And the violence levels are crazy high because there is no security system in Iraq. This is the major reason why Iraqis are leaving. In addition, there is some sectarian tension that is growing because of political reasons. The separatists, the Sunni and Shia separatists, who are the minority, when they came back to Iraq after 2003, one major obstacle that faced them to implement their separation project were the 2 million Sunnis in Shiastan and the 2 million Shia in Sunnistan. So they had to purify these regions from the ethnically overlapped social structures and fabric to purify them by kicking out Sunnis and Shia out of their homes because of political reasons, not because of religious reasons. So all of these people who left Iraq or left their homes and either went to Jordan and Syria, there are 750,000 refugees in Jordan, 1.5 million in Syria, maybe 100,000 in some Scandinavian countries, and tens of thousands in other countries around the region. Most of them left because of these reasons, and most of them want to go back home as soon as the security situation gets enhanced, as soon as the U.S. pulls out from Iraq completely and gives Iraqis their country back.
Thank you, Ra'ed Jarrar. You're listening to One Land, Many Voices, and you're tuned to KBOO, listener-sponsored community radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, 100.7 FM in Corvallis, and 91.9 FM in the Columbia Gorge, and naturally also available as streaming audio at KBOO's website, www.kboo.org.
And we're going to be going out to Pledge Central to start our pledge drive, our pledge break in earnest. And I'm going to start it off by simply saying how fortunate we are, how fortunate KBOO listeners are to hear voices like Ra'ed. How often do you get to hear an extended conversation? Yes, it's a little briefer this morning because of the membership drive, but it's that what makes that conversation possible, what makes hearing that voice possible, is the fact that this is listener-sponsored radio. This is a membership, a democratic organization, and that means you need to get involved. So please give us a call. What's that number again? I can't see it in front of me here.
It is 503-232-8818 for those calling from Portland. 503-232-8818 and toll-free 1-877-500-5266. 1-877-500-5266.
And who is it out there in Pledge Central that's talking with us this morning?
Good morning, Will and Hala. This is Jenka, and next to me is Trillium. And I just want to tell listeners, if you don't know what's going on, you're listening to KBOO Community Radio's Fall Membership Drive. I want you to pick up your phone right now and dial one of those two numbers that Hala just mentioned. That is 503-232-8818 or 877-500-KBOO to support important programming like what you've just been listening to with Raed Jarar. And as Raed was saying, the comparison with the British occupation of Iraq, the ongoing political struggle there, and the logic of withdrawal from Iraq is what you've been hearing about. And if you'd like to find out more about that, you can get a book called Iraq, The Logic of Withdrawal, that puts this whole occupation into an historical context and gives the step-by-step, okay, let's pull out of Iraq, and what's that going to mean? And again, the parallels with the British occupation are so apparent, and yet other media just aren't talking about that. But here at KBOO, we are. We're hearing about it from people like Raed Jarar. And you can get this book, Iraq, The Logic of Withdrawal by Anthony Arnaud, for a $60 a year minimum pledge. And you can do that in $5 monthly installments from your checking account.
So you can do that by calling 503-232-8818 if you're in the Portland area, or 1-877-500-5266. And the great thing is you also get to hear that phone ring. You are taking an action to support community radio, to support voices where we just heard what the majority of Iraqis want. And that is not something we hear on radio very much. It's not something we hear on any radio station. But here on KBOO, on One Land, Many Voices, you hear from people like Raed. So please call now. Don't hesitate. 503-232-8818. And for a $60 pledge, you can receive. We have several books to choose from, and one of them is The Problem with Israel by Jeff Halper.
And again, the types of analysis that you hear on One Land, Many Voices, show after show, are the voices that are censored on other stations. This is the type of news and analysis that you're not going to hear anywhere else. Even on the supposedly left-wing stations, you're not hearing the type of analysis about the Palestine-Israel situation and the reality on the ground that you're hearing here at KBOO on One Land, Many Voices. If that's something that you support, give us a call right now, and you can make your pledge in a very painless monthly installment type of way that's very easy to do. You can do that by calling 503-232-8818. Show your support for Will and Hala's show, One Land, Many Voices, and for KBOO Community Radio. And you can pick up, as an added bonus for a $60 minimum pledge, one of these thank you gifts, Iraq, The Logic of Withdrawal, which is a point-by-point challenge to the assumptions underlying arguments accepted by war skeptics for supporting an increasingly bloody occupation. That's by Anthony Arnaud, and that's a $60 minimum pledge. Also for a $60 minimum pledge, you can get Crimes of War, Iraq, by Richard Falk, an astonishing collection of essays that delve into such phenomena as the torture at Abu Ghraib, the doctors who facilitated it, the toxic combination of flawed military policy, counterinsurgency, grief, and anger that lead ordinary people to commit atrocities, and testimonies of U.S. War veterans that have gone to Iraq and that lay bare the flawed strategy of the U.S. mission in Iraq. We've only got two copies of that book. So give a call right now, 503-232-8818. Outside of the Portland area, it's 877-500-KBOO to become a member today.
And Jenka and Trillium, we are also lucky this morning to have, as a gift from One Land, Many Voices, we have 10 books, Rashid Khalidi's The Iron Cage, The Story of the Palestinian Struggle for Statehood. And we also have Ilan Pape's The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. So please call and get as a gift these books that we're offering.
Ilan Pape is an Israeli analyst. And also we have another book by an Israeli, Jeff Halper, an activist with the Israeli Committee Against Home Demolitions, who's written a book called The Problem with Israel, an analysis of the current political landscape in Israel, history of the many opportunities for peace that have been blocked or squandered by past and present Israeli governments from an Israeli peace activist's perspective. And any of those are a $60 minimum pledge, or you can get two for a $120 minimum pledge, and you can do that by just $10 a month from your checking account. Very, very easy to do. Give us a call right now. We've got volunteers standing by. Looks like we've still got a line open, 503-232-8818 or 877-500-KABU. Our volunteers are just waiting to talk to you and offer you so many benefits of becoming a member of KABU right now.
It's a great way to thank Will and Hala for the amazing programming that they bring to you, and it's a great way to not be silent. If you support KABU Radio, you also can make that statement and not be silent. And to support, there are so many ways to support peace, to support anti-imperialism, and calling KABU and becoming a member today is one of them. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
And you heard about the taxpayer money that's being spent in Iraq on these atrocities. And I just want to point out the money spent by Oregonians on the Iraq war is $3 billion, soon to be $4.5 billion, as soon as the funding bill goes through, which it looks like it's going to for the coming year. And that money is going to fund war. Wouldn't you rather your money not go to fund war, but go to fund the community radio station, The Voice of Reason, in Portland and surrounding areas, KBOO Radio? Now, we're not asking you for $4.5 billion. We don't need that type of money. We run on a very shoestring budget. We're just asking you for $120 a year to get two of these books and become a sustaining member of KABU. Or if that seems a little much to you, you can become a member with a $40 a year minimum pledge, or a low-income membership is $20. So give us a call right now, 503-232-8818. 877-500-KABU. Let's hear from the supporters of One Land, Many Voices in Manning. Let's hear from the supporters in Rainer, in Vancouver. Let's hear from supporters in some of these outlying areas. We know that you're listening. We know that KABU and One Land, Many Voices provide a lifeline to you to hear the kind of news and analysis that you're not hearing anywhere else. Please give us a call right now and become a member of KABU.
And that number again is 503-232-8818. Or 1-877-500-5266. I want to mention, you know, we've been talking about the war and occupation in Iraq, and we've been talking, of course, all along about Israel and Palestine and the struggle for self-determination of the Palestinian people. Tomorrow, here in Portland, you have an opportunity. Not only, of course, we want you to join as a member of KABU. That's an important opportunity to support this work and this struggle. But also tomorrow here in Portland, this Saturday, there is a peace rally and a march. It's the next big mobilization to bring an end to wars and occupations. This Saturday, 11 a.m. at the North Park Blocks, Northwest Park and Flanders. That's tomorrow, Saturday. Stop the wars and occupations. Bring all the troops home now. And our host here, Hala, is speaking tomorrow. So you're going to get a chance to see Hala, not just hear Hala speaking, as you do here on One Land, Many Voices, but you're going to get a chance to see her tomorrow. What are you going to be talking about tomorrow at this rally?
I'm going to be focusing, as we do in the show, on Israel and Palestine, and I may end up being the last speaker, so I will wrap up. And what I'm hoping to do is to really focus on what we can do with respect to these two occupations, not really focus on the lack of hope that is permeating all throughout Palestine now, but try to focus on why we should have hope.
And it's so important to keep that hope alive. We've heard that phrase before. One way of doing it is by calling right now, becoming a listener sponsor. I want to just mention something that I think is not talked about nearly enough. What is the distinction between listener-sponsored radio and commercial radio? We think of the product of the media industry as the television programs or the radio programs that we listen to, but the product of the commercial media industry, what they sell are you. Audiences. They sell their audiences to their sponsors, to their corporate sponsors or their business sponsors. Now, we know that the product of this wonderful institution, this home, this family that we call KABU Community Radio, the product is what you're hearing. The product is the conversation, the analysis, the perspective, the news that you hear over the airwaves. And it's brought to you by volunteer programming and a wonderful staff here at KABU. And that depends not on corporate sponsors, because we're not selling you to corporate sponsors. We depend on you to be a listener sponsor, to be a member, to be a part of the KABU family. So please call us right now. We're going to be going away from our pledge break here. We're going to listen to a segment, the first segment of Rashid Khalidi's lecture, June 23rd. That lecture was called 40 Years of Occupation, 60 Years of Dispossession. He presented that lecture on June 23rd. I have to say that was my birthday, so it was quite a birthday present for me. And Rashid Khalidi, we're going to go to that lecture, and I need to remind you as you listen to that lecture that by calling in at 503-232-8818, you can get a signed copy of Rashid Khalidi's book, The Iron Cage. This is just an important, a vital contribution to understanding the history of this conflict, and by understanding the history that much better, figuring out a way to adjust peace for the region.
And before we do that, Will, I liked what you said about family. It's as if we're sitting around the dinner table talking politics with each other. Those of us who share the same values about a world that is a peaceful world. Where else, folks, can you hear, certainly not on the commercial media, that today is National Indian Day? It's a very special day for me, especially in light of the parallel histories between Palestinians and American Indians. I also want to let our listeners know before we go to Rashid Khalidi that Marcel Khalifa is coming to town. He's the UNESCO Artist for Peace. He will be here. Get your pens out, please. Sunday, October 28th. At the Aladdin Theater at 7:30 p.m. He has his 2007 U.S. and Canada tour. So we're lucky to have him here in Portland, Sunday, October 28th, 7:30 p.m. You can go to the AladdinTheater.com website and get your tickets there. Again, Marcel Khalifa, please note that the Arab American Cultural Center of Oregon is co-sponsoring this event with the Middle East Studies Center of Portland State University. I'm proud to be the first president of the Arab American Cultural Center of Oregon, so please support us by going to see Marcel Khalifa.
And please support community radio by calling right now, 503-232-8818. I know it's so easy to think, I'll take care of it later. I'll go to the website, which you can do. You can go to the website and pledge. But I think it's really important to you, and you know, I know you know that I'm talking to you. That's right. You're listening to this program right now. I'm talking to you. Go over to your phone, dial 503-232-8818 as you listen to this first segment from Rashid Khalidi.
I'm thrilled to see so many people at a conference entitled 40 Years of Occupation, 60 Years of Dispossession. I think whoever organized this deserves a round of applause. This is an impressive gathering. It's especially impressive at a dispiriting and discouraging time like this. Palestine is in a deep crisis. Palestine has been in a deep crisis for 40 years. The title of this event indicates it. In fact, it's been in crisis for 60 years. The title of the event also indicates it. I think all of you know this. I'm not telling you anything that you don't know. If you know a little more about the history of Palestine, you know that, in fact, Palestine has been in crisis for most of the 20th century and right up till today. It's one of the things that the book that Hala mentioned, The Iron Cage, tries to explain. Now, I could, if I had the time and the energy, I could lay out for you all the elements of the current crisis. But I think that that really is something that's better done on paper than in a talk. There are some things that you really ought to read rather than listen to. And in fact, I think that some elements of the problems that we see today in Palestine are things that have not changed in their essentials. One of them is a concatenation of external forces, which have put the Palestinians in what I call in my book an iron cage. I originally meant that metaphor to describe the structure that the British shoved the Palestinians into during the Mandate, a system where they had to accept a situation in which essentially they didn't exist and another existed before the British would even talk to them. They said, you have to accept the terms of the Mandate, the Palestinian leaders would say, but the terms of the Mandate don't use the word Palestinian or Arab. It talks about the national rights of the Jewish people, the establishment of a national home for the Jewish people in Palestine. It has six articles talking about how the Mandate regime is supposed to do this. It doesn't talk about us. Our political rights, our national rights aren't even mentioned. The British would say, you have to accept the terms of the Mandate. And I describe that as an iron cage. The metaphor, in fact, is applicable to other externally imposed situations that the Palestinians have faced since the period of the British Mandate. I'm actually not going to talk about that today. I think that that's, again, something better read than listened to. I think, though, that there is something that I do want to talk about, which is also a central element in my book, but I will talk about it in terms of the present rather than historically. And this is a critical element, which I think is hard to talk about, but is some, and many people avoid talking about, and this is the internal element, some of the deep internal problems within the Palestinian national movement. As I try and show in my book, this is, in fact, an enduring element in Palestinian politics. The inadequacies, the failures, the internal conflicts of the Palestinian national movement in the 30s and the 40s were devastating. It's very easy to blame the British. It's very easy to blame the Arab governments. It's very easy to blame the League of Nations. It is possible to talk about American policy until the cows come home and blame the Bush administration or blame the United Nations or blame the Europeans or blame the Arabs or, of course, to blame Israel. And this is not to say that those are not all targets worthy of blame. But I think most people in this room know about that. So I'm not going to talk about those things except in passing. I want to talk about some of the more complicated and harder to talk about issues which have to do with Palestinian internal politics. Now, many people who follow Palestinian politics today, in the wake of this devastating fighting that's just taken place in Gaza, have been quick to place blame for the divisions within Palestine on external forces. They've focused, many of them, not I think incorrectly, on the entirely nefarious role played by leading figures in the Bush administration in encouraging, fomenting, and arming a Palestinian civil war. That's not wrong, in my view, to focus on that. Some people go so far as to talk about this or that Palestinian faction or group as traitors or as stooges and so forth. This, to me, is reminiscent of one of the most destructive and damaging aspects of Palestinian politics back in the 30s and the 40s, when tahwin, calling other people traitors, was common on both sides of Palestinian politics. And it is, I think, probably a mistake. And I'm not going to do that today. In what I will be talking about this evening, in fact, at the Unitarian Universalist Assembly, I'm actually going to focus on the Bush administration. I'm going to focus on their Manichaean vision, on how that Manichaean black and white, good and evil, axis of evil as against whatever, how that has destroyed Iraq, taken Iraq from what was a unified country to possibly a country that may not remain unified. Take a society that was still barely managing to function and shatter it. Take the structures and institutions of that society and completely destroy them, leaving the country in a state that is almost indescribable. I will be talking about those things tonight. I'm not going to talk about them today. I will say, however, that that same Manichaean vision, that same obsessive, unfortunately, in some measure, religiously derived vision of good and evil has also driven this administration's policy in Palestine and in Lebanon and has played a share in pushing both of those societies close to the abyss. I would be the last person to minimize the importance of the role played by our own government in all of these crises, whether Iraq or Lebanon or Palestine. But I think I'd be preaching to the converted, frankly, if I talked about that here today. I don't think there's a person in this room who probably voted for George W. Bush. Or if there is, they probably have repented and are hiding their heads in shame even as we speak. This is a man who has the lowest approval ratings of almost any president in modern American history. So it's very easy to pile on to the Bush administration. Many, many, many people now who mistakenly supported the war or supported this administration have seen the error of their ways and have seen the light. I'm not going to talk about that today. I think it's more important to focus on the internal problems of Palestine. If we're going to understand how this very grave situation came to pass, and if you can best understand how you can show solidarity with the Palestinian people. And what I'm going to do is not so much give you history as give you just a little background that I think is relevant to how we got to where we are today. The first thing has to do with a sort of evolutionary process that's taken place in Palestinian politics over the past 40 or 50 years. Palestinian politics have gone through three phases post-48. The first was a phase in which pan-Arab organizations, organizations that were Arab nationalist, organizations that saw that a solution to the problem of Palestine had to be found in a larger framework, tended to dominate Palestinian politics. A group called Harakat al-Qawmiyya al-Arab, the Arab nationalist movement, and its offshoot, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, dominated that first phase. That was the 50s and into the 60s. These were people who essentially understood that you could not do anything to change the situation of the Palestinians through mobilizing the Palestinians alone. You had to do it in a larger, essentially Arab context. And these were the people who dominated Palestinian politics for the first couple of decades after the 1948 war. The second phase was a phase that started in the 60s. And this is a phase dominated by a very different kind of political formation, a group called Harakat Tahrir al-Watani al-Falastini, the Palestinian National Liberation Movement, which you probably better know by its acronym, reverse acronym, Fatah. Fatah first appeared in the late 50s. It was a clandestine organization originally. It came to the surface in 1965. It came to dominate Palestinian politics by the end of the 60s. And the era of Fatah lasted from sometime in the 1960s through the 1990s. Fatah took over the Palestine Liberation Organization, changed Palestinian politics thoroughly. And the only point I would make about Fatah was that it was a broad coalition. It was a group which argued that the Palestinians had to take the lead in solving their own problems and argued against the pan-Arabist trend that had previously dominated, that before the Palestinians can look to other people to show solidarity with them, they had to get their act together.
And this was sort of... And folks, I apologize. We do have to interrupt Rashid Khalidi because we only have a few more minutes to make our membership goals for One Land, Many Voices. I want to mention just at the top of this final pledge drive pitch here, and it's so important that you call at 503-232-8818, 503-232-8818. That again, we are having a big peace rally in March tomorrow, Saturday. Please show up at 11 a.m. at the North Park Blocks. And they need peacekeepers to work at this rally tomorrow. If you've done peacekeeping before, or if you'd like to find out how to do it, give Peace and Justice Works a call at 503-236-3065, 503-236-3065. That's to volunteer as a peacekeeper for tomorrow's peace rally in March, which is, of course, a call to end all wars and occupations. Bring the troops home now. But we are here at KABU Community Radio, the family of KABU, and we are calling on our family, our members. If you are already a member, renew your membership, upgrade your membership, be generous, because every dollar you give to KABU, I'm telling you, KABU is going to continue on because KABU is a strong family, community, grassroots effort. It's going to continue. But every dollar you give is going to make KABU stronger as a family. We're going to be able to make those phone calls to London when we talk to Bashir Abumene, as we did a couple months ago, a wonderful scholar at Barnard College, a Palestinian scholar at Barnard College. We're going to be able to make those long-distance phone calls because you pledged today. What kind of gifts do we have for pledgers today?
We have at least a couple of books, the first of which is Rashid Khalidi's book, the second of which is Ilan Pappé's book. Ilan Pappé's book, the title is The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. I think we only have one book left of that, and so please call 503-232-8818. 503-232-8818. I know it's easy to sit back and say, you know, other people will call and I can, I don't need to make that call right now. But you really need to pick up the phone and support our program and support this radio station.
And you can also hear the rest of that lecture that had to be cut off. You can get the CD, the full CD of the lecture by Rashid Khalidi for a $60 minimum pledge. And I would actually like to suggest that you go ahead and get the book, the CD, and you can also get a DVD of Rashid Khalidi, and that is for $180, and that's just $15 a month. If you can afford it, $15 a month from your checking account, 503-232-8818, 877-500-KABU. We have some people to thank. Janet from Tigard is a new member. We've got Laura, Michael, and Joe are all renewing members from Portland. Richard is a new member from Gresham. Esther from Zigzag, a renewing member, and Hala from Portland, a renewing member. So thank you. And we have $200 to go for the goal for One Land, Many Voices. So give us a call right now and help Hala and we'll reach that goal, 503-232-8818, 877-500-KABU.
And if you call now, you can receive your copy, your signed copy of The Iron Cage, the story of the Palestinian struggle for statehood. And we do still have copies left of that. We just need two people to call in and pledge $10 a month to reach the goal for One Land, Many Voices, to thank Hala and Will for all the hard work they do. Call us here at 503-232-8818. And for all our friends and listeners outside the Portland area, you can call toll-free at 1-877-500-5266. You're going to hear those phones ring when you call, and you will know that you're doing your part to support community radio, to support freedom of speech, to support peace and justice in your community.
And you can still get Iraq, The Logic of Withdrawal by Anthony Arnault for a $60 minimum pledge. You can get The Problem with Israel by Jeff Halper also for a $60 minimum pledge. And I know that we have listeners out there who would really love to have as their thank you gift Rashid Khalidi's The Iron Cage, The Story of the Palestinian Struggle for Statehood. That book is who you've just been listening to, Rashid Khalidi, a leading expert on the Middle East and the Israel-Palestine conflict, bringing vital perspective to Palestinian attempts to achieve independence and statehood. He synthesizes the latest scholarship, concentrates on the period of the British Mandate from 1920 to 1948, established by the League of Nations after World War I, and the creation of the State of Israel. The Iron Cage, the story of the Palestinian struggle for statehood. You can get that for just a $60 a year minimum pledge to KABU, in addition to all of the benefits you get from being a member of your community radio station, KBOO.
And Will and I just have a couple more announcements real quick. For those of you who love to have a great time, I want to tell you about an Arabic party. It's called a hafla, which means party in Arabic, October 27th at PSU at Hoffman Hall, to support the Al-Khalidi Scholarship Fund for Arabic Studies at PSU. The party is going to start at 7 p.m. and go on into the night. There will be an Arabic band, lots of Arabic food, dancing. I hope to see you there.
I'm definitely going to be there. And also, I want to make sure you know that KABU is co-sponsoring a visit to Portland by alternative radio founder and director David Barsimyan. That's Monday, October 22nd at the SEIU Local 49 Union Hall at 3536 Southeast 26th. That's Monday, the 22nd, to see David Barsimyan talking about his new book of interviews targeting Iran. But most importantly, as we finish up this edition of One Land, Many Voices, please give us a call. Please pledge your support. Become a listener sponsor for KABU Community Radio, 503-232-8818, 503-232-8818.
And I almost forgot, Will, for those who want to come to the Arabic party, the Hafla with food and Arabic music, call for tickets 503-636-0650, 636-0650.
And thank you very much for tuning in to One Land, Many Voices. We'll see you where you'll hear us next month, fourth Friday of each month at 9 a.m. Please call in 503-232-8818. Support listener-sponsored, grassroots, democratic community media.